And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, last week was a big political week. Lots of things happened. Of course, the Republicans managed to monopolize the headlines because they just do, because they seem to know how to set the agenda or keep the initiative.
That's it, keep the initiative.
Yeah. And in politics, like in warfare, the initiative is everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching this guy make the named David Pepper make the circuit of TV shows. He wrote a book about saving democracy. And he says the key is always play offense, which is always be on offense, which is my rule number four. I mean, we saw, you know, they talk about the fire hose, you know, that that Donald Trump had on the CNN show. But they all do. I mean, Kellyanne Conway, Motormouth, stuff like that. You listen to, you know, all of the interviews with the Republicans in Congress, and they all get back to blasting, the Democratic positions. It's always offense, offense, offense.
And it's not the case that because you're progressive or liberal, you can't be on offense. Just the opposite. This weekend, Memorial Day weekend, exactly 77 years ago, this weekend, in the state of New York, in Rochester, there was a gigantic strike. What happened was that the city decided to fire a bunch of municipal workers, 489 of them. What happened was that they had formed a union, and they were asking for a contract. So the city did just what bosses always do. They fired all the workers. In the next 2 weeks, all the unions in the city, 60,000 members, demanded the workers rehiring and started picketing municipal facilities, bus depots, sanitation garages, all the municipal facilities, and they shut them down. So the cops, ordered by the mayor, arrested the pickets. 250 pickets were arrested. The city refused to reverse the firings. So then the unions organized their own strikes. Teamsters struck, printers struck, electrical workers struck. Even the projectionists in the movie theaters struck. The two daily papers struck. The Amalgamated Clothing Workers struck. All simultaneously, it was a general strike, brought the city to a standstill. The city government caved immediately, rehired everybody, and recognized the union.
Well, that's when, you know, unions had a high percentage of workers.
That's right. That's right. That was right after the war. That was 1946, May 28, 1946.
The
war had just ended. It was the war for democracy. These working class people felt democracy is democracy. We'd like some.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the point is they took the offensive. They didn't take it. They didn't sit back and take it.
Yeah. You know, talk about unions. This week, the Scranton Times has been running a series. They on page two of the paper, they always have this column at the bottom of the page looking back, you know, 70, 80, 90, mm-hmm. 110 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back 90 years ago, to, which would be 1933, and one of their reporters, I think she was related to the owners of the paper, went undercover to work in some of these dress factories.
Mm.
And she was reporting on conditions in the dress factories and how little these people were paid and what really kind of sweatshops they were. And she went to more than one of them.
Mm-hmm.
She named names, you know, what you were supposed to do and how much time, free time they were expected to give to making, you know, just a few dollars a week. I mean, we're talking less than $10 a week. Well under
that.
$4.50,
yeah.
$6 a week. Piece goods versus hourly,
yeah.
You know, and how they,
yeah.
How they were watched in bathroom breaks, you know, and things like that.
And what year was this?
33? 1933. You know, 33. It was yeah. Right after FDR took office.
Yeah.
Before the Wagner Act that you point out to. And,
And by the way, in 1933, there was no mass unionization. It hadn't happened yet. There were people trying to organize unions in all the various places, all the industries, the shops. Workers were scared. But they didn't have legal protection. When the Wagner Act was passed in 36, all of a sudden, it all bore fruit. Because now the workers were not scared. And now they had the protection of the law. As soon as they weren't scared, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of workers joined these unions. And the era of the mass unions, the CIO, the Congress of Industrial Organizations, began. And all this stuff that you hear, well, the New Deal brought middle-class wages to everybody. It wasn't the New Deal. It was these unions that forced the employers to give them wages, benefits, that we now look back on and wonder, where did they go? We wish we had them.
Right, you know.
And that was because people did not sit back. They took the offensive.
Right, right. And, well, now look at just the struggle that the Starbucks workers are having.
Yeah.
And Starbucks is not considered to be a bad employer, you know, in terms of the conditions or this or that. But they want to make sure that that things are better for themselves. And you see, you know, it's really amazing that Howard Schultz, who was the founder and CEO, and then he went back to CEO, you know, how personal he's taken this. Like, how dare these people decide that they want more from than what we're giving them or what we've been able to. You know, they're well
above. He was born 400 years too late. He talks like Lord of the Manor.
Yeah.
You know, this is an era of free labor. This is not an era of serf labor.
Right. Right. And that's one of the things that we're seeing is in many businesses, particularly in those service industries, they can't either get or retain help. Look, in Pennsylvania, the minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. And the federal minimum wage for restaurant workers is still, what, $2.16 an hour?
$2.16 an hour. And if the minimum wage had kept up with the rate of inflation, it would be up to $26 an hour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I keep getting this one meme about, I think it's Denmark or Sweden, one of those countries where the McDonald's, the minimum wage is 20-some dollars an hour, and the Big Macs still cost less than they do in the United States. You know, and the other one I keep getting is, you know, how many millions of dollars the CEO is getting, and no one claims that his salary or her salary, it's mostly guys, his salary is causing, you know, the inflation and the price of the sandwiches and things like that.
Apart from that, as we've mentioned before, so many employers just steal the wages from their workers. They owe them the money. They don't pay them. They make them work overtime. They don't pay them the overtime. They make them clock in early and get ready for work, do things that they're supposed to do on company time. They won't pay them for doing that.
Yeah, when I was out in California, the notorious ones were the ones, the cleaning people that came in at night.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they brought their kids in to help work, or the kids would, you know, sleep. They had nobody to watch these kids. And
the Republicans are helping things along. They're legalizing child labor again.
Yes.
In state Iowa, after state. Yeah.
Iowa, you know, working in the meat packing plants and things like that.
Well, it goes right along with Howard Schultz. If you want to have a, 18th century point of view, you should have child labor. Yeah.
It's the management viewpoint versus the labor viewpoint.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. But you know what? There's a lot of workers. There's very few managers. 80% of the people have to work for a living. They don't live off the income from their capital. They live off the labor that they sell to whoever will buy it and employ them.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things is since the pandemic, people have decided that they either want or they have to stay home with the kids instead of trying to find daycare. And you can't find daycare in many places, or the daycare can't get workers because they're not paying enough.
I talked to the young woman who works in our local post office who has a young child, gave birth a couple of years ago, who was looking for some place to put the kid for child care. And the only place she could find, first of all, it was in Wilkes-Barre, and second of all, cost more than she was making.
Yeah.
She doesn't. There was no point in going to work. The whole thing didn't make sense. You tell me that this is a country that can't afford child care for people? It's
Everybody else can, but not
everybody else can. It's the employers who benefit from it. They should pay for it. My father used to say that transportation ought to be free because in New York, the subways were built to get workers to the garment industry because in those days there were nearly a million people who worked in the garment industry. All the subways went from the outer boroughs into the garment center. And my father used to say, well, why should we pay for it? It's there to bring us to work. Let the people who are profiting from our work pay for it. And that was when the fare was a nickel. He wasn't the only one who thought that.
Yeah.
Anyway, here we are in Pennsylvania, and in many ways, this was a bad week for the people of America politically. I mean, the politicians who sit as judges in the Supreme Court came down with some awful, awful rulings. Maybe we'll get to that. But
we had some political news.
We got some electoral news, right? Your buddy Mastriano made some news.
Yeah, I mean, he got crushed for running for governor last year, but since then he's been making noise about running against Bob Casey for the Senate seat in 2024, and he's been teasing about that. And this last week he said he was going to have an important announcement on Thursday that people would be pretty happy about it, and it came out, and he said, "I'm not going to run."
Now that's interesting. Why did he say people would be happy about that?
I don't know. I think whatever. Certainly the Republican Party is happy about it because they've been trying to clear the field for Dave McCormick. If you remember, he's the guy that lost to Oz in the primary by less than 1,000
votes. By a vote and a half, right?
Yeah. And it's mostly self-funded. He's an ex-hedge fund guy, spent most of his time in Connecticut. And supposedly he's going to help self-fund, that he could put $10 or $20 million into his own campaign, which takes a lot of pressure off the Republican National Committee and the Finance Committee, the Senatorial Committee. And so the Republicans have been trying to clear the field. Mastriano would be beaten again by Bob Casey by at least the same numbers that Shapiro beat him by. But now McCormick is more formidable. He knows how to try to morph his way into something more reasonable. And his commercials are going to be less. He has to go less to the right in order to win a primary. But he may not be clear yet.
Who's going to run against him? Anybody?
I've heard or I've seen rumors that Stacey Garrity, who's the current state treasurer, or Auditor General, I think, who was a surprise winner a couple of years ago, is making noise that she wants to move up, so to speak. And she's got, she doesn't, one thing, she has a real political base. She's from one of the northern tier counties, a couple of counties west of where you are. Not a lot of population, but she seems to have that same religious grouping that Mastriano has.
But she's not as nutty as he?
She hasn't been as outspoken as he, let's put it that way. And the position she's in, she can't do very much differently. Now, where she would get her money from, I don't know. Because unless there's an anti-McCormick group out there.
Huh.
So we'll have to see. But it's bad news for Bob Casey. Because he's going to have a tougher time. I still think he'd be the favorite. The other thing is, of course, it's going to be a presidential year, and with Biden on the top of the ticket, the Democrats are more likely to come out and be helpful, but it's no sure thing. It's no sure thing. There's ballot splitting that goes on in Pennsylvania, and we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. So,
well, speaking of the presidential election, the Republicans again dominated news there as Ron DeSantis, whose pitch is that he's a more competent fascist than Trump, managed to completely bungle and incompetently opened his campaign this week.
Yeah, well, he had a partner in crime.
He chose him. He chose him.
He chose him. And of course, you know, Musk is one of these, you know, his phoniness has just been exposed. He's all for free speech, as long as you're, the free speech is the, you know, the right wing free speech.
Yeah, exactly.
He's opened up a lot of his site to no longer monitoring. I mean, the anti-Semitism up there is more than doubled on Twitter, and you know, he just played footsie with the president of Turkey, shutting down the opposition side, essentially, using the excuse, well, if I didn't go along with this, he would have shut me down completely, and then people wouldn't be able to get anything. But I mean, that's a pretty weak excuse. So
now Musk, you know, is a white man from who grew up in South Africa.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Somebody, and he says he supports DeSantis. He likes DeSantis. So somebody asked DeSantis, what does he think about the fact that Musk supports him? And DeSantis said, well, I'm for every African American supporting me. Now, there's something
glib.
Despicable and racist about that.
Sure.
You know, that's just that's what you can expect from this guy.
Yeah.
This DeSantis. He is a competent fascist? I don't think so. Fascist, yes. A racist, yes. But a snide guy. That's what he is. He's snide.
Well, he's mean.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to back off of anything. He keeps doubling down and doubling down. And of course, we've seen what's happened in Florida. You know, he talks about all the great things that have happened in Florida, but the people there will tell you that things are not going so great anymore. He hasn't been paying attention to it. He had a good first few years run, but now you've got all these battles going on with schools and book burning and book banning, and him personally taking on any business that doesn't toe the line. You know, anybody says anything that he doesn't like, and he'll unleash the state against them, which is really fascistic, totalitarian type of stuff. And you know, Chris Christie.
But with him, it's not only fascistic in form; it's fascistic in content.
Sure.
Because you know, what is he after? He's after trying to make sure that nobody knows the racist history of the United States, that nobody knows the history of the African-American population in the United States, that public schools get wiped out, that universities have only a right-wing curriculum, and that any professors who have tenure and who are not pro-fascist lose their tenure and get fired. That's what he's implementing. So the fact that he's implementing it in an authoritarian way is terrible, but what he's implementing, democratic or authoritarian, is worse.
Yeah, he's bringing back 1984.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And you know,
they say his wife is even worse, but that's hardly his.
Well, you know, we keep seeing that in politics. You have Ginny Thomas,
yeah,
with Clarence, but he's the one with the power.
He's the one with the power. Then there's Tim Scott who jumped in.
Yeah.
So
Tim Scott puts a happy face on bad policies.
A happy face on lying, hypocritical policy. Tim Scott, who introduced a law 2 years ago to defund police if they did not follow federal mandates, federal laws about how people should be treated, said when he jumped in that he was against defunding the police. He wrote the damn law. And he says he's against it. Now, from the word go, he's a liar.
Well, my opinion is he's running for vice president.
Whatever he's running for, he's a liar.
Yep.
But, you know, if DeSantis flames out, He's a good stand-in.
He could be. I mean, there's still a whole host, and who knows who else is.
Who's even heard of the others? Vivek Ramaswamy?
People are trying to push him. He's not gonna go anywhere. You still have Nikki Haley. Mike Pence is yet to come in. And lurking in the background,
Asa Hutchinson.
Asa Hutchinson. But lurking in the background is the guy who said he wasn't going to run, and now is rethinking that. That's Glenn Youngkin. But people in Virginia, you know, are not real happy with what he did. You know, he pulled a fast one over them. He tried to convey himself as a moderate, and he wasn't. The only problem is that the Democrats nominated the wrong person at the wrong time.
You could say that over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have to see what those folks do. And meanwhile, I mean, the Republicans in other places have got problems. Texas.
Texas, how wonderful.
You know, I mean, Alan West, I think, is still the head of the Republican Party down there.
If he isn't, he was anyway, right?
Yeah. But you have, you know, you have the Attorney General, Paxton, who, you know, has been under federal indictment. I believe it's federal indictment for like 8 years.
Since 2016.
Okay, 7 years.
Right. Don't make it worse than it is.
Don't make it worse than it is.
And what has he been indicted for? He's been indicted for securities fraud.
Fraud, right. And why he hasn't been tried, I don't know. But now he got himself into a contest with the Speaker of the House, whom he accused of being drunk on the floor.
He was probably right.
I heard the guy's slurred speech, and he was either having a neurological problem or a substance abuse problem or something else happened. But it sounded like he was drunk. But lo and behold, you know, like I said, these guys don't back down. They play offense. So now the Speaker of the House has decided that Paxton should be impeached.
But you know why he did that? Because the Republicans appointed a panel of four Republican former state prosecutors. They commissioned them to make an investigation into alleged misconduct by Paxton, not the securities misconduct, not that fraud, but misconduct in the office. For example, his goings on with his mistress, his intimidation of people in the office, workers in the office, and so on. So they spent a long time investigating, and then they issued a report. And the report said, yeah, he did all of that, and he should be impeached. The Republicans said that. So the biggest charge was that he took bribes from a real estate developer. And then when four deputies reported it to law enforcement, he fired the four deputies. So he made a settlement with those four deputies for $3.3 million.
Right.
But not his money. He built the state treasury to pay the $3.3 million. This guy hasn't got the slightest bit of shame.
No.
And this guy is the leader of all the other Republicans' attorneys general when they sue in that wonderful court, that federal court in Texas, when they go after all the Biden administration policies that they want to get rid of.
Yeah, they're going after him again.
Yeah.
By the way, before we, we just talked about Texas, but something came out in Arizona just recently. Apparently, Governor Ducey, before he left, secretly transferred $50 million from the state treasury to private schools that they're not allowed to do. The incumbent governor, the new governor, made some revelations about that.
Well, all these Republicans wanted to scuttle public education.
Yeah, yeah. And that's been one of the things. So they've got all of that going on out there in Arizona. And who knows where these things are going to pop up again,
Meanwhile, the repercussions of the January 6th are continuing. The Oath Keepers who got convicted finally got sentenced this week, right?
Yeah, Stuart Rhodes, who was really the brains behind the operation. He was waiting outside with the arms, with the guns and everything. He got sentenced to 18 years,
right,
which is the stiffest sentence of anybody involved in the insurrection to date. And the judge was having none of his show of remorse or whatever he said. The judge said, you continue to be a danger, a clear and present danger to the United States. You're going to wait for a long time.
And then his assistant was also sentenced.
Yeah, she was out there. Some of the stuff, and you get the religious overtones if you heard the recordings and things. And she got 8.5 years. Again, these are bigger sentences. Most of the people have been sentenced have been in the, the 3, 4, maybe 6 year range.
Most of the people were, foot soldiers. These guys were generals.
Yeah, yeah. And so that those things were, I think, pretty important.
Maybe not generals, maybe colonels. All right.
Well,
the general hasn't been tried yet.
No, the general hasn't been tried. General Trump, General Bannon.
Right.
Those coordinators. And then, you mentioned the Supreme Court. There were this one decision came down this week on wetlands, and it severely limited the definition of what the government could regulate in wetlands, saying that they have to be attached to a larger body of water rather than just being marshes and swamps, where so much of the activities of water and the purification of water occurs. And
the law says adjoin, has to adjoin. Yeah. They, in the court, decided that adjoin should be attach. If you're a textualist, which these guys claim to be, it's clearly different. Adjoining something is not the same as being attached to something.
Right.
They just rewrote the law.
Yeah, well, and one of the people is Neil Gorsuch, whose mother was the EPA chairman under Reagan, I believe.
Yeah, and who went to jail. She was nearly indicted for undermining the Environmental Protection Act.
Yeah, and she was a real anti-anti.
She was against protecting the environment, just like the what's her name? The education secretary under Trump was against public education.
Yeah.
That's the way to run the government, appoint people who don't want to have the government.
Yeah. Meanwhile, these folks don't want to have learning. We had this week some lady popped up in Florida again and said, we shouldn't have books or the poem by Amanda Gorman that was read at the inauguration of Joe Biden.
Which I didn't read, which she never read.
Which she never read.
Right.
And it's just, and the school boards cave into this stuff.
Sure.
And it turns
out, why do they cave in? Do you have any idea? They're not forced to cave in.
No. Well, it's the quality of people on school boards.
Yeah. Now, don't be attacking all the people on school boards. Some of them are good.
Yes,
but down there, they are all part of the DeSantis machine.
And don't forget, Steve Bannon is out there telling people, run for school board. We want you to take over the school boards.
That's right.
Where learning, or actually now non-learning, takes place.
Don't learn, don't know, don't care. That's the way to make America great.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we got Memorial Day this weekend. While the Republicans are trying to cut money for the VA.
And we have to cut it right there.
All right.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.